Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome to your first Rossafari Zoo News for the year of 2024. Yay, exciting times. All right, so as y'all know, but maybe you're a new listener so you don't, Zoo News is a crowdsourced zoo news program. So if you see any stories that you think are worth me looking into in the world of zoos or animal stuff in general, conservation, aquariums, all those good things, you can tag me in them on the socials at Rossafari, at RossafariPod on the TikTok machine, or email them to me, RossafariPod@gmail.com. This is the part of the episode where I normally talk about what's going on in my life, but honestly, in the last week, there hasn't been all that much going on. Y'all heard about, you know, Miles's visit last week, and this week has just been some downtime, honestly, working on some things, prepping some stuff, reached out and set up some new interviews for this year that I'm really excited about. A lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but nothing really worth putting on Zoo News. However, I do want to talk to you about Zoo News itself. So in the last couple of weeks of the last year, I did something where I did some shorter episodes and focused less on the very easy one or two line stories and more going into depth on a few stories and trying to make it a little bit of a deeper dive on a few things and share some of the maybe less easy to find stuff. And that way I don't have to do an hour long episode with 40 or 50 stories. And it's not less work for me, but it's a different kind of work for me. But I found that I really like it. I like being able to go deep on a few things. I like being able to script a little harder, do more research into a few of the stories, and hopefully add more depth to these episodes. And also, I'm kind of coming at this from the perspective of the fact that if you follow this podcast, you probably follow most of the zoos out there on your socials, or at least, you know, the ones that we talk about the most on here. And so you don't need to know every time that an animal moves for an SSP breeding wreck, or every time that, you know, some very small thing happens. Oh, this zoo got a new flamingo for their 35 bird flock. That's just not that exciting. And you have socials and have already read it. So I'm trying to do stories where I can actually add some depth or you know, make them a little bit, I don't know, better is what I've been going for. And if that leads to shorter episodes, but maybe more ones that have stuff that will stick with you, then that's a good thing in my book. But I want to hear from you. So let me know if you've enjoyed that format these last couple of weeks and how you feel about it as we go into the new year. I find that it is inspiring me more than the old types of episodes, even though it's not all that different. But I do get pretty excited about it. Like, there's one story at the end of the Zoo News section this week that I am so excited about and spent a lot of time reading stuff. And I can't wait to share it with y'all. So, hey, I should stop waiting to share it with you all. So let's get to it. All right, so we're going to start off with our births this week, and we're going to start off with the Toronto Zoo, which has announced the birth of a white rhino calf. This is the first white rhinelet born to Mother Sabi, and both mom and calf are currently doing well, though they are doing so off exhibit for now. They will obviously be on exhibit down the road, but for right now, they're getting some mommy and baby bonding time. But yeah, pretty exciting stuff, and congrats to the Toronto Zoo. the San Diego Zoo has announced the birth of two squirrel monkey babies. They were born within a day of each other, but are not twins, as they were born to two separate mothers, but the same father. Naughty, naughty. Since spider monkeys participate in alloparenting, it's currently very common to see both youngsters riding on one mother's back. Alloparenting is a fancy term used to describe any parental care provided to a young individual that is not its own direct offspring, which are often referred to when talking about alloparenting as non-descendant young. It seems like this is just one big happy monkey family. And hey, keep that term alloparenting in your mind, because we're going to come back to it. We're going to come back to it. And that's not just an animal thing, by the way. If you are in a family where, like, grandparents help raise the kids or anything like that, you are participating in alloparenting. So now you know. All right. The next birth comes from the Honolulu Zoo, which has announced the hatching of a Turaco chick, or a Turaclet. The baby was born in the African aviary at the zoo, which is currently closed to the public to accommodate the early life of the bird. Now, the Turaclet is currently learning to fly, and when it is deemed a safe flyer, the aviary will reopen to the public, and you'll be able to go and see this little baby bird. For those of you who don't know and can't tell from my voice right now, Turacos are one of my favorite types of birds, and I am just really excited about this one. If y'all remember Sam Evans, who regularly contributes to Zoo News and the keeper I spoke to at the Honolulu Zoo many moons ago on the podcast, she's always trying to get me to come to Hawaii and come to the Honolulu Zoo. And I have to admit, I've never been more tempted than I am right now, because I really love Turacos. The San Antonio Zoo has announced the birth of the first ever baby Babirusa born at the zoo. The little boblet, this is another let that I really like, was born to mother Sula and father Creature, which I think is just an excellent name for a Babirusa, since they do kind of look like the house elves in the Harry Potter series. So congrats to Sula and to Creature and to the whole team at the zoo. And speaking of a Babirusa, another boblet, I really do like that a lot, has been born, this time at Zoo Miami. And just like in the last story, it is also the first time that a Babirusa has been born at this facility. The parents are both 4 years old, almost five, and the baby is doing well. Baby and mother are currently in a secluded holding area, but will eventually be visible on exhibit. Congrats to the team at Zoo Miami. And sticking with our themes of babies born at multiple zoos, two Sumatran tiger cubs have been born at the Auckland Zoo in Australia, and a single Sumatran tiger cub has been born at Biopark Roma in Italy. All three are currently doing well and are being raised by their mothers without the need for human intervention so far, which is something that isn't always the case with Sumatran tiglets. So really exciting news about some international births of Sumatran tigers. And of course, now that we've done our births, we have to move on to our deaths. And this first one, y'all, it hurts. It really does. This is terrible. The Oklahoma City Zoo and Botanical Gardens has announced the passing of Kieran, the juvenile male red panda cub birthed last year. Kieran was experiencing inflammation of his gastrointestinal tract and unfortunately passed away from the issues on Christmas Day. For those of you who are nerds like me and follow these things, Kieran was the offspring of Kiana and Benjamin, who was born at the Philadelphia Zoo and later moved to the Cape May County Zoo. I actually got to know Benjamin there, and it was pretty cool. And to be clear, I realize I say that and I sound like I'm sad for Benjamin, and I'm sad about this death, but Red Panda parents by this point in time. It's not a thing, especially for the father. He's fine. Yeah, but the loss was very unexpected, and I am just so devastated for all the keepers there. So sending all of my love and condolences to the team at the Oklahoma City Zoo. The Denver Zoo has announced the passing of Collie, a 14-year-old okapi. Collie grew ill unexpectedly, and the veterinary team did a thorough examination under anesthesia to try to understand the issues that Collie was facing, but unfortunately, she was not able to make it. They weren't able to figure out what was going on, and she did pass away. A necropsy is being done to understand exactly what happened to this beautiful okapi, but in the meantime, sending love to the team at the Denver Zoo. And last but not least in this section, the Dallas Zoo has announced the passing of 15-year-old giraffe Pharrell. He apparently fell unexpectedly while in the giraffe barn. The fall injured his jaw in such a way that it couldn't be surgically repaired, and the issue would have led to a tongue amputation and other complications in the future. Given that giraffes can't really have a quality of life without a tongue, and that other complications would have led to additional issues for the guy, the difficult decision was made to humanely euthanize Pharrell. Now, this is really sad, obviously, but it's actually something that I've learned a little bit more about recently in some private conversations and zoo visits pertaining to giraffes in general. So, for as amazing as giraffes are, it turns out they are really, really fragile. And as such, a single fall can mean death for a giraffe, and that's true whether in human care or in the wild. When it comes to designing giraffe barns and other areas where they live in human care, a lot of steps are taken to limit the chances they have to trip and fall. But sometimes these things are unavoidable. I have to tell you, some of the stuff that is used for veterinary care while trying to take care of the giraffe in question is really amazing to see up close. And a lot of steps have to be taken down, you know, if you're going to do a knockdown of a giraffe to make sure that it doesn't fall down and hurt itself. They really are fragile. A lot more thought goes into giraffe care than you might think with how prevalent they are in zoos. So this perspective that I've gained recently has helped me better understand the rash of giraffe deaths I've talked about on here recently, and also to appreciate just how much amazing work the good zoos around the world put into keeping their populations as healthy as possible. Anyway, I digress. Sending love and condolences to the team at the Dallas Zoo. All right, so moving on to the rest of the Zoo News portion of Zoo News, I often talk about the importance of transparency on this podcast, and I want to give props to the North Carolina Aquarium on Roanoke Island on that very topic. A juvenile sperm whale was washed up on shore recently and was stuck in the swash zone, making it unsafe for humans to work with it or help it. The aquarium started talking about it right away, including encouraging people to stay out of the water and explaining what was going on kind of in real time. They then did another update explaining that the health of the whale was declining and that with rehabilitation being impossible, the best thing the team could do for the animal was humane euthanasia. They also committed to doing a necropsy and informed their followers that they would release the information for the necropsy once it was completed and all of the data was compiled. I enjoyed watching this because it wasn't just transparency, but it was transparency about something they were helping with, but that didn't happen like at the aquarium or anything. This was a whale that they could have mentioned nothing about to the public. But it was just very cool watching them do this work and tell everyone about it step by step without even knowing what the results would be. and then continuing to be open when things went downhill for the whale. I'm really impressed by the work that they put in, by the care that they gave to an animal in need, and by the transparency that they had with all of it. So, you know, amazing work to the team there. Zoo New England recently announced a pretty awesome donation, a portable X-ray system from a company called Associated X-Ray. The portable X-ray is really impressive. It's literally a handheld device that allows vets and techs to get high-quality radiographic images regardless of body size or shape of the animal. Also, with Zoo New England having two facilities, Stone Zoo and Franklin Park Zoo, this device is small enough to travel between the two. So all of the animals in Zoo New England's care get to benefit from this. It's very cool to see how this donation is making a huge impact on the healthcare of the animals at two amazing facilities. All right, so I rarely touch on pre-birth announcements on here because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But this one is really cool. Sedgwick County Zoo has announced that they are currently expecting 4 baby elephants, thanks to, well, frankly, a bunch of pregnant pachyderms. 4 babies! That is the most that I have ever seen announced being expected at the same time. Before that, I would say the highest number was 2. And this is, well, okay, it's hard to say exactly how much more it is, but 4 is definitely more than 2 by some amount. So anyway, all joking aside, I really hope that all goes well and that there are suddenly 4 baby elephants at Sedgwick County Zoo. How incredible is that? This next story is some sea turtles. So we often talk about what goes into saving sea turtles, and I think it is always amazing to see and hear about the work that the rescuers and rehabilitators and others involved do. And normally these stories end up in conservation news, but this one's in zoo news, and you'll hear why in a moment. So a post from Marathon Turtle Hospital this week really illustrated to me the unique way that all of these teams come together to help an animal. A male leatherback turtle was found stranded on South Beach in Miami and was transported to the Turtle Hospital for treatment. Now, just to take care of this one turtle, not only were Marathon and the Turtle Hospital involved, but our friends at Zoo Miami, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the Miami-Dade Sea Turtle Conservation Program, NOAA, the Miami Police, and the U.S. Coast Guard station at Marathon were all involved in the transport and initial care of this single individual animal. That is a lot of teamwork. So here's hoping that the turtle heals up well and gets a clean bill of health and is able to be returned to the ocean. But what amazing work by Zoo Miami and all of those partners to save one stranded sea turtle. I love it so much. The San Diego Zoo participated in the Tournament of Roses Parade again this year. Now, you may remember hearing from Dr. Lauren Howard during our EEHV episode about how a lot of people on the zoo team, including her, work on the float each year. Well, this year, the 2024 sweepstakes trophy was awarded to the San Diego Zoo. This award goes to the float that is considered the most beautiful entry encompassing float design, floral presentation, and entertainment. Congrats to the team at the San Diego Zoo. Why is this zoo so darn good at just everything they do? It's kind of ridiculous in the best way. And we're going to wrap up the zoo news portion of this episode with 2 stories from the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. First, researchers at the National Zoo and Conservation Biology Institute have developed new methods to sequence a previously unculturable strain of a type of chytrid fungus. Remember that? Chytrid fungus? The thing that is associated with mass amphibian deaths around the globe and that we don't really have much of a cure for yet, despite constant research into it? Well, this strain is one that apparently only affects one type of Japanese giant salamander, and it is far less lethal than most strains of chytrid. Now, despite it not being one of the most deadly forms of chytrid, this is still super exciting news because scientists believe the methods used and developed in this process can be used to sequence other fungal samples that have been unable to be cultured until now. It is also believed that genomic analyses done from this research will provide answers to questions such as why the other strains are so deadly and why they tend to have so many different types of hosts in comparison. In other words, it seems like by sequencing a chytrid that doesn't have those traits, the scientists may be able to better understand why other ones are that way. I'll be curious to see what further research comes from this, but hopefully this is the beginning of the end of the chytrid fungus. And then also from the National Zoo this week, there has been a coup in the naked mole rat community at the zoo. I'm sharing this story because it is interesting, but also because I love the transparency the zoo is showing by explaining all of this. It turns out that naked mole rats have a really interesting culture, living as a eusocial species, meaning the colony follows a single breeding female, known as the queen, with some of the non-breeding individuals providing care for the queen's young, which is another example of alloparenting, like we discussed earlier. This is similar to how a hive of bees works, or an ant colony, but it's also a really fascinating process that we don't fully understand scientifically. The queen is the largest female in the colony, more on that in a minute, and it is believed that she is somehow able to suppress the ability of other females to mate, though it is unknown how. Now, in a naked mole rat colony, a queen can be challenged and dethroned at any time, which is what happened recently at the National Zoo. And this is another fascinating thing about naked mole rats. You may be wondering, well, John, if the queen is the largest, how does this happen? Or, to put it another way, how is the queen the largest female if a new queen can take over? Well, the queen doesn't start as the largest. Instead, every time there is a new queen, she starts to breed, and every time she breeds, the space between her vertebrae grows, thus making her the largest over time. And she continues to grow regularly as an adult once she becomes the queen because of this. This is also hopeful to the continued growth of the colony, as larger queens are able to give birth to more babies per litter, with new queens giving birth to as few as 10 naked mole ratlets at a time, while larger queens give birth to as many as 30 at once. At any time, any female can challenge to become the new queen, though it is harder as the larger size gives the current queen an advantage over any challenger. Also, the queen will often have, for lack of a less anthropomorphic way of saying this, loyalists who fight on her behalf and help to defend her, basically like knights that rush into battle to protect their queen. Again, we're anthropomorphizing, but that's kind of what it's like. However, sometimes the challengers do inflict mortal wounds to the queen, at which point chaos reigns. See, it's not just the challenger that then gets raised up to the position of the queen once the previous queen has fallen. Instead, at that point, any female that wants to can battle for the new crown. And just to be clear, they don't actually wear crowns. They're naked mole rats, remember? Got to get some humor in here. But I do. This is fascinating. I do find this so fascinating. So, yeah. So that is what happened at the zoo recently, with one of the naked mole rats killing the queen. And now the colony is in the midst of a battle to determine the new queen. The National Zoo has a naked mole rat cam, and they are keeping it running during this time, so there is a very real chance that if you tune in, you will see some of this civil unrest. And one thing that I find fascinating about this is that we know that zoos have an obligation to give their animals the best lives possible. We regularly talk about the extreme lengths these facilities go to in order to ensure that quality of life of the animals in their care is top notch. But in some cases, that looks a little different. So for naked mole rats, it means basically letting nature play out and letting them select their new queen, even if it can lead to fights, damage, and death. The zoo is still able to help in some ways without intervening in the overall process. For instance, when the old queen was toppled, she was mortally wounded, but didn't die immediately. Keepers and vet staff stepped in to perform a humane euthanasia so that her death wouldn't be a long, drawn-out process. But beyond that kind of thing, the zoo is letting these animals do what these animals do, and it is using it as an incredible educational opportunity to let the public learn about the life cycles of a colony of naked mole rats, which I think is very cool. And for those of you who pay a lot of attention to the podcast, you may be wondering something else. You may be saying to yourself, well, this is interesting. If there's only one breeding female, how does that work with zoo's stated goals to avoid inbreeding? And the answer is that it doesn't. The National Zoo talked about this a little bit in a blog post recently, and they said that basically all of their naked mole rats are related but continue to breed, and that it seems like some species are just built that way. Like, that is what would happen in the wild, and the species don't really show any of the negative effects of inbreeding that other species do, especially over time. So again, this is just another great example of, you know, giving them a high quality of life by letting them be them, even if to us it sounds a little weird and like something that, you know, an SSP would try to avoid. But that's not the case here. So I love this whole story, and I hope you are a little more impressed by naked mole rats now.
Conservation! Conservation! News time! Oh yeah!
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced an update on the whooping crane population in the wild. Currently, thanks to the protections given to these birds under the Endangered Species Act, there are believed to be over 500 whooping cranes in the wild today. While 500 is still a small number overall, the wild population was estimated to be as low as 20 individuals before recovery efforts started, so this is a huge conservation win for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it really shows how the Endangered Species Act is helping save species, like whooping cranes, which I really enjoyed putting in here because I like saying whooping crane. The states of Maine and Massachusetts have announced that they have received $27 million in public funding, specifically to help collect better data about North Atlantic right whales and to improve fishing gear to avoid harming these incredibly endangered animals. It is awesome to see the states taking steps to save this species and to hear that they were able to secure federal funding to do so. North Atlantic right whales, we talk about on here a lot. Their populations are really small. Literally every birth is celebrated and tracked. And yeah, so any step is just a huge deal right now. Congratulations are in order for Surya Bahatri, one of the forest guardians of Red Panda Network. Surya has been selected as a recipient of the Nepal CMS Vatavaran Green Ambassadors Award. This is an award that exists to recognize and encourage grassroots conservation initiatives. Now, this is a huge win and also serves as further proof that the community-based conservation initiatives of Red Panda Network are not only working, but are getting noticed both internationally and in Nepal, where they are taking place. So that is really exciting news. Congrats to Surya and to the entire team at Red Panda Network for this amazing win. And then last but not least in conservation news this week, a distressed baby whale was recently discovered off Waikiki in Hawaii. Fortunately, there was a woman on the beach who knew exactly what to do. She bravely ran into the water, jumped onto the whale's back, and rode it, possibly hoping to get some good pictures or videos, just like everyone is supposed to. I hate people sometimes. But look, all joking tone aside, I am genuinely so sick of hearing stories like this. There is currently a movement underway to try to identify the woman from photographs that people have of her on the beach, not on the whale, thankfully, but the lack of decorum and the lack of empathy and the fact that so many people think they can do whatever they want and that animals are just things we can use for cool photos or videos or whatever is just so disgusting. And it does matter. Like, it's not just an annoying story. It actively goes against the conservation message that is so needed to save species, which is why I'm mentioning it in here. And as I say frequently on here, I know I'm preaching to the choir right now, but just remember that whenever we see people using wild animals for this kind of stuff, they really are having a negative effect on how people view non-human animals and their role in the world and how humanity should interact with them. And so you should get mad about that and talk about it and put it on your podcast and hope that your listeners care. Well, that's what I chose to do anyway. And that brings us to...
It's time for other news. It's time for other news. Hey, all right now, right now it's time. It's time for other news. Hey, it's a segue to the podcast.
All right, just one quick story and other news this week. But one of the most interesting things I've learned recently is that pinnipeds are pro-union. It's true. They have actually joined in a labor protest happening in Chile recently. So fishermen in Chile are currently protesting the government's repeal of an existing fishing law and also the non-payment of promised bonuses that the government, you know, promised and then reneged on. So part of the protest involved the fishermen dumping their catches on the street, which led to sea lions coming onto the streets to eat the discarded fish. The best part of this is that there are photographs of the sea lions protesting. Okay, they were just eating right in front of police vehicles that were there to try to break up the protest. I knew I liked pinnipeds for a reason.
Oh, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Hey!
All right, and so we are going to continue with our slow ramp up into the animal holidays for the year. We're in January, obviously, which is a month without its own, like, animal month. Boo. And then Friday, January 5th, is National Bird Day. And Wednesday, January 10th, is Save the Eagles Day, which, if you're a football fan, you know seems like an almost impossible task lately. But those are your animal holidays for the week. All right, so there you have it, folks. Another week of Rossifari Zoo News is in the books. And I would like to say thank you to all of my patrons, especially my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Schenk, Dr. Stephen Williamson, and Barbara Bennett. And I'd like to remind y'all that you can go to patreon.com/rossifari to support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. I'd also like to thank everyone who contributed a story this week, including Anya Keene, Colleen Lenihan, Kim Cooley Croninger, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Jay Meredith, Dr. Laura Schenk, Sam Evans, Karen Musklow, Jay Dunkley, Emily Rockbuck, Kristen Khalil, Elizabeth Dunlevy, Ali Malensky, Kay Malensky. The Malenskys are back, y'all. They did the thing. The Malenskys. I know that so many of you have been just fuming all week about what happened last week, but it's okay. Everything's okay. And as a matter of fact, I want to wish the Malenskys a lovely trip as they are heading to Atlanta to see Zoo Atlanta and the Georgia Aquarium soon, which is a really couple amazing places to visit. Anyway, moving back to the list, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Michael Sebastian, and my new favorite name of anyone that I have ever had send Zoo News to the podcast, Carmelo Scusarella. I'm Italian. I get it. I love it. So thank you all for contributing so much. And yeah, I'm looking forward to dropping Tuesday's episode soon. But until then, remember, friends, the words Newsy Credits backwards are Steider Kiswen.
The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Ross Safari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Ross Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
Carmelo Scusarella.